Alex. Hello. Sounds like you're trying to get rigged up there.
Yeah, okay. You there, Jim?
Yes, sir. This is Jim Giles. We are live and on the air. I called you first today. I'm going to now call Brad.
That's fine.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you great.
Good. I can hear you very well as on my end also. Glad to have you.
Okay, good to be here.
Hello?
Brad?
Hey, how are you doing, Jim?
Good. This is Jim Giles. I've got Alex Linder on the phone, or rather on the Skype as well. Let me do this. Can you hear me okay, Brad?
Oh, yes, I can. How's my voice coming through? Is it?
I can hear
I'm
you
not fine. Sure about this.
I can hear this, no, I can hear you good. Alex, can you hear Brad okay?
Yeah, I can hear both of you just fine.
Okay. Let me just check all my buttons to make sure I'm archiving. I am. I've got that button. I do have enough experience at this point not to make some basic errors that I used to make early on. And I can recall interviewing you, Alex, and it wasn't near as pretty as I think it will be now. But let me begin by saying this is Jim Giles, and you are listening to Radio Free Mississippi. And joining me via Skype is Mr. Alex Linder in Kirksville, Missouri, and joining me via telephone is Mr. Brad Griffin in, I believe, Alabama. Pretty sure he's in Alabama.
It's, Montgomery, Alabama.
Montgomery, Alabama. Boy, I just sends chills up and down my arm and neck saying it. I always like to ask my guest to give a brief biography of themselves. Yeah. And so, Brad, would you do that for us first, please?
Okay, well, I'm the owner of Occidental Descent. I had a web forum before then, no longer. So I've known Alex for about 10 years now. Went to Auburn University, and I graduated with a bachelor's degree in political science. Will that do?
Yes, sir. That's
just
fine.
Oh, and I'm a Southern Nationalist, and I'm a member of the League of the South and the Council of Conservative Citizens.
Okay, I was kind of speaking over you when you said Southern Nationalist, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, we're going to get into that, I'm sure, a lot here in this debate. Okay, Alex, would you give us a brief biography of yourself, please?
Name's Alex Linder. Right now I appear mostly at VNNforum.com. That's my forum. Graduate of Pomona College out in Claremont, California in 1988, degree in international relations. Last time I had any formal education, I don't miss it at all. I mostly make fun of stuff, write satire, call myself somewhat of a white activist when I can be. That's about it.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I very much appreciate y'all joining me here. And let me say this before we get started, a couple of things. I applaud and very much admire your courage in what you're doing. You are amongst a tiny few. In as large a country as we live in, the things both of you are willing to express yourself on very eloquently, there's simply a dearth of men out there willing to do the same thing. So I understand the expense involved in doing that firsthand. And I just want to tell both of you, I admire you for doing it. And one other thing I'd like to say, I hope this is not the last time we get together. I would like to, since y'all are such limited commodities out there, I would like to come together again repeatedly in the future and address these issues in a professional way. I want to compete with CNN and MSNBC and Fox News. I think your minds are every bit as good and better than the minds I hear, at least via internet. I don't do TV anymore, but y'all's intellects are second to none. So, and having said that, you know, I don't think y'all are going to, but don't tear into each other so much that we can't do this a lot more in the future. So having said that, let me introduce the first topic. And, you know, I Googled around in regard to debates, and what I decided is I'm not going to hold a firm line on time. I think y'all will respect one another enough. And, you know, somebody may end up talking more than the other person. No big deal. I mean, we'll make up for it in other ways at other times. And so, having said that, the first topic I'd like to discuss and have y'all give your viewpoints, and y'all can question the other, and if a good question occurs to me, I'll try to inject it into y'all's just general conversation. The first topic is the election of 2012 that we just witnessed. And in regard to who goes first, Alex, you take a first cut at it since you're a bit older, senior, and then we'll let Brad go at it. Meaning of the 2012 election.
I don't think it meant very much at all. You know, two candidates who aren't really different in very many ways. And in any case, the deeper stuff is decided by the permanent bureaucracy and the powers that be who own the media and manipulate the money, and that wasn't going to change regardless of which one of them was elected. So I don't think it has the weight that I believe Brad thinks it has, if I can call him Brad.
Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. But I think he thinks it has much more weight than I do. I pay more attention to the stuff going on in Greece than the U.S. election until the last couple of days. And I mainly noticed the reaction over at Gawker, where they're praising their little shrimpy little nerdy Jewish pollster who runs, I guess, some site 538, and I guess he correctly predicted it very very closely. But beyond that, you know, so what? Romney, Massachusetts liberal, or you know, a half black liberal tool to Jews from Chicago. Either way, you're going to get a slightly different emphasis, but the same basic thing. I'm more worried about who controls the media and the money and the demographic things and how we create something to oppose that. And that's, you know, there's nothing within the electoral system right now that's going to change that. So I really don't have that much to say about it. It didn't mean that much to me.
All right, Brad, what's your take on it?
Okay, my take is that, the first thing we got to do is we got to step outside our little bubble. Here in the racialist internet, people look at these elections and they see, there's not much difference between the two candidates. But when ordinary people are watching this election, they're not approaching it from the same perspective that we are. They think that there's a huge difference between these two candidates. And I would say that if you look at the two parties, if you look at the Democrat Party, if you look at the Republican Party, now, I think we can agree that at the very top of those parties, you have a lot of the same donors and a lot of the Wall Street people who will contribute to both parties, and both parties kind of bend together towards the top, at the very top. And that's what accounts for the perception that there's not much difference between the two parties. But if you look at the base of the two parties, you will see that if you look at the Occupy Wall Street crowd, and then compare them to the Tea Party crowd, it's not the same crowd. At the base of the two parties, it's very different. Now, at the top, where the money has the most influence, and Alex alluded to that, there's not much difference. But you got to think, these are two groups of people who don't really like each other that much, and they're engaged in a tug of war. And when one of them loses, they're very emotionally invested in this, and they take it very personally. Okay. And so my thoughts on the 2012 election is that, well, first, I think that the 2012 election is a tipping point for the GOP. The demographics have changed, and that means the South can no longer carry the GOP to the White House. I mean, just by us coming out and overwhelmingly voting for the Republican, that's not good enough for the Republican to win anymore. So this is the last, I've seen this coming for about 10 years. And this is 2012 is going to be the last competitive national election for the GOP. Second thing, this is the point where I think the tension between the GOP base and the GOP elite that we've seen a big tug of war going on within the GOP over the last 2 or 3 years. And I think this is a point where that tension is going to start to boil over, because you already have the GOP elite saying they're going to start intervening more in the primary process, and that's going to antagonize a lot of these conservatives. Third thing, this is the point where, like in the 1850s, the balance of power within the Union starts to shift dramatically away from the South and towards the Northeast. And last time you saw that happen, you saw the growth of secessionist sentiment in the South, and you saw the beginning of a feeling of national consciousness in the South that ultimately broke apart the Union. I would also say that the worse is better strategy of letting Obama have it for 4 years, it produced zero effect in the Northeast or the West Coast. After 4 years of Obama, all the liberals in the Northeast and the West Coast, it didn't change them at all. They came out and supported him just as much as they did last time. And I also would say that this is the point where the tension between the states and the federal government really starts to come to the fore. Now that the conservatives have been decapitated at the national level, I think you'll see, and conservatism becoming more of a state philosophy, original philosophy, you'll see a lot more tension between the states and the federal government. Like in Alabama, we recently nullified Obamacare in this last election. And I'd also say, finally, that this, the disintegration of the GOP at the national level will remove the major barrier to Southern nationalism, just like the demise of the two parties did in the 1850s. I'm real excited. We see that nullification is already back in a lot of the Southern states. We see that secession petitions flourishing. We've got Eric Holder. He sued Alabama. He sued Florida. He sued Georgia and South Carolina. So I'm real excited moving forward. I think the tension between the states, especially here in the lower South, and the federal government is really going to reach a breaking point. So I'll turn it back over to you.
Alex?
I only wish I could be that excited about it, but I've seen all this sort of stuff before, and, you know, anyone with a basic working brain could have seen that this day was going to come when eventually the whites couldn't prevail over the Jew minority coalition. I wrote as much in 1997. What is that? That's practically 20 years ago. And that wasn't particularly insightful. Anyone could see that it was coming. This election may have been the tipping point, or it may not have, but all those things that he said, I'd love to see any of that happen. I'd love to see a rising Southern nationalism. I'd love to see a governor stand up and actually do something and not back down, but that's never what happens. In my lifetime, it's never happened. All that happens is the people vote one way. You can go after the liberals. Oh, those dirty liberals, those dirty white liberals, they're the problem. California voted against 187. They don't. White people anywhere, just in Michigan the other day, they voted against affirmative action. What happens? The federal judges toss the thing out. Okay, so let's go back to the original decision, or at least in the second half of the 20th century, Brown versus Board of Education. That was a deliberately illegal move. And because it wasn't met by counter-physical force, the principle became established, these people can do whatever the heck they want. Vote however you want, and we're going to do what we want, and you're going to suffer it. And as I was pointing out last night in the forum, you know, when they sent in the federal troops to forcibly integrate Little Rock High School, they were led by a Southerner, a Texan. And he didn't like it. He thought it was a bad idea, but he felt it was his duty to follow the law. Well, the Jews sure didn't follow the law in Brown versus Board of Education. So ultimately, all of this talk is, you know, it's Fox News type stuff. It's basically irrelevant. Are you willing to use physical force to defend yourself? If not, they don't care how you vote. And you don't own the media, and you sure as heck don't control the money. And now this is the real point I want to make. The one candidate who happens to be a Southerner who actually supported this stuff that would truly undermine Zog and could truly promise a path of liberation for the South was not supported by the South. He was supported by the North and other places far more than anywhere else, and he was undermined by the person the South did vote for. They deliberately screwed Ron Paul in state after state. Am I saying he would have won? No. I'm saying he would have done even better than he did do. And if he'd had the balls to stand up on race, he might truly have gone somewhere. And that's why I'm saying we should be stealing his appeal and adding race to it, and then we might actually get somewhere if we were going to work inside of the system. But You know,
let me ask
let's see one person stand up and actually go through with it. No, what always happens, the feds will shoot them down and they won't do anything about it. I wish it were otherwise.
Let me ask this question out of curiosity. Alex, did you vote?
No, I haven't voted since, I don't know, I voted for Reagan once. And everybody else I'd ever voted for was never elected. And Reagan, I voted... See, I consider, okay, you're young. Remember, please, excuse me. I grew up in the age before the internet. I didn't have people telling me anything. I was a conservative individualist. I totally believed what I read from the right-wing writers. And only after moving to D.C. and being around blacks and seeing Marion Barry smoking crack on tape and seeing them real, I realized, like, Jesus Christ, these people aren't going to suddenly become, you know, property-owning, tax-paying, church-going, law-abiding, respectable citizens. I'm like, you've been lied to. The right is a bunch of liars just like the left. And then I was working at a conservative publication, and I'm typing, you know, as an intern, I'm typing out the checks to the writers. I'm going, what the hell? I always knew the Jews dominated the left, but all these checks I'm writing, half of them are going to Jews too. And I began to realize, even though the front of professional conservatism is basically Irish Roman Catholic, the reality is they follow a political line set by the Jews. Right, and no one else has any real power. Like, where do the faces on Fox News come from? They come out of the South. They're often male cheerleaders of ambiguous sexuality. You know, your Shep Smiths, and these are the people cheerleading for these Zionist wars. So you see the people running the system, and the people out front, the sports fan politics that Mr. Griffin is talking about. I lost interest in that after the 80s, and I saw after voting for Reagan. You know, the guy talks a good game, and I'm young and naive, and there's no internet. Even though I studied all this stuff, I wasn't too dim to make out. They're just lying to you, buddy. They're making it up. So I vote for Reagan because he says stuff like, I'm going to eliminate the Department of Education. I'm going to eliminate this department. I'm going to do this. He gets in there. He doesn't do any of it. And then I said, okay, well, you lied to me once. And I said, that's it. I'm done. Now, voting may make some sense on a local level where there's not any particular power or money involved. But on the national level, there's really nothing you can do that's going to affect anything. You're getting... basically two charades that are backed, as even Griffin says, they're backed by the same money, the same agenda. It's what they agree on that matters more than what they disagree on. That's why it doesn't interest me. I'm interested in their deep, real politics, not the sports fan politics.
Brad, did you vote?
Oh, yes, I did. I voted for Virgil Goode, who was, I believe, the U.S. Taxpayers Party. And he used to represent I believe it was Charlottesville when I lived up there in Virginia. He used to be the local congressman there. And he's a good man. He's solidly against immigration. He was pretty good on free trade and a bunch of other issues. He's a social conservative. And I believe that he was someone that, you know, I could vote for and be comfortable with. I didn't vote for Mitt Romney.
But Brad, why doesn't the South vote for, is it Goode or for Ron Paul? Why don't they vote for someone who's in line with their principles instead of a Massachusetts liberal? It's insane.
We'll get to Ron Paul. I believe that's a separate topic.
Yeah, it is.
The 2012 election, and I want to say Alex, he did say that. One of the good points he made is that, you know, he pointed out how the federal government had thrown out the Michigan Civil Rights Initiative, which had banned affirmative action in Michigan. And he's absolutely right about that. We can't do anything under this union because the federal courts, each and every time we pass something, they will jump in into the middle of it, and they'll strike down anything we pass. Alex sees that as a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. And Alex has stressed that we need to create polarization. And I can't think of anything better to create polarization than to keep passing these laws and letting the federal judges keep striking them down and then point out that we live under a tyranny that's ruled by judges.
Well, okay, but you just said worse is better doesn't work. It's not a strategy, by the way. It's an analytical, it's just analysis.
We
can't make it go one way or another. We don't know if it's worse or better until after the fact.
Let me qualify, okay? Let me speak very specifically here. Worse is better doesn't have the same effect How do you define worse is better?
That's exactly the point. You can't know until after the fact. That's why I always say I don't know what's worse. Only ultimately do I know what's better. But I mean, right now I don't know if it's worse or better to have Romney or the black guy in there. You know, or
is worse or better having Democrats in office? Well, because if that's the case, then there seems to be no change at all in the Northeast or the West Coast. Every time there's an election, they don't go. They're not looking at when they go out and vote. These people, they're not thinking to themselves, "Oh, well, I'm voting for worse is better." They're thinking to themselves, "I support Obama because I agree with his policies." And so it's not worse is better from their perspective. When Obama wins in a place like San Francisco, California, or the Northeast, or even parts of Iowa where the majority of white people voted for him, they call that progress. They think it's a good thing that Obama and all the anti-white Democrats all won. They celebrated it. They've been high-fiving themselves for weeks now. Now, in the South, when worse is better, if we define that as the Democrats winning, then yes. Now, in the more conservative parts of the country, in the more racial parts of the country, it does have an impact. If you look at Ole Miss, there was a near race riot at Ole Miss the night of the election, and of course, some asshole he produced a study that showed that the number of racist tweets flying out of Alabama and Mississippi was like 8 or 9 times the national average on election night. So there's some empirical data that shows that when the Democrats win, it does provoke Southerners. But when the Democrats win in places like Vermont, it's high five. It's great. It's wonderful.
So wouldn't you say that's good? And you're right. Gawker covered all that, and they had a big list of tweets from basically Southern white high schoolers, not all Southern, but all white, lamenting the nigger being reelected. And they made a big thing of it. And yes, they're completely gloating. And yes, they do think it's progress. But I don't have any point to that.
They're not changing their views. These people in places like where all these Gawker people live, they all live in the blue states or little enclaves like Austin and Asheville.
Yeah.
When all these anti-white Democrats triumph, they see it. They're gloating. They're doing the dancing in the end zone. They think it's a great thing that they got 4 more years of Obama.
Absolutely right. But what's your point?
It's not thank you. Good. Okay.
Okay. I'm sure y'all will come back to the election, but let's just move on through some of these other issues now. This election, from my vantage point, seems to have spawned another kind of a semi-event. I don't know how big of an event it is, but these secession petitions. What are the prospects for these secession petitions? And let's go with you, Brad, first.
Oh, well, you know, when 30,000 people in that, when 30,000, hold on a second, I'm getting an incoming call here. When 30,000 people or in Alabama or other states go out and the secession of Alabama, I think it's a wonderful thing. And then when you got about 18,000 people in Mississippi and at least 30,000 in Georgia and in Florida and especially in Louisiana and Texas, where you've got I believe the last time I checked, it was about 120,000 people in Texas had gone out and said they want to secede from the United States. When I look at that, I say, hey, that's great news. Wonderful. Now, does that mean that Texas is about to secede from the Union? No, I don't believe anybody believes that. I believe that, what does this secession petitions mean? I think it means, for one thing, that I remember Alex coined the term the patriotards back in when Bush was in office. And we've seen a kind of arc. We've gone from the patriotards, the Bush years, to the Tea Party, Take Back America people, and we've gone to now to the secession petitions. And when I was at the gym the other day, I noticed that this gym I had been attending had took down the American flag, and it still isn't back. So we're seeing a dimming of patriotism. It's way down from what it was, and that's positive. And when all these people went out to Obama's website, and went to his website and signed their own name and gave their personal information and their email address on Obama's lenders always saying that we need people to use their real names. And so when hundreds of thousands of people go out and say they want to dissolve the government on Obama's website, I don't see how that's a bad thing. It means what this is basically it's a shot across the bow. This is a signal to the establishment that the existence of the Union for the first time and probably since the war between the states, it's an issue now. The Union is an issue. Secession is an issue that's out in the mainstream conversation. It means that the Union can no longer be taken for granted, and it means that secession is being contemplated in the minds of these people as their last resort. If they're pushed to the brink, they're saying that they will secede, and that's a good thing, even though they might not do it now.
Let me just
now. I think it's a clear sign that the taboo surrounding race and a lot of things have weakened, especially in the South, and I also think it means a definitely a more favorable climate for Southern secessionist organizations like the League of the South going forward.
Let me inject this before Alex jumps in. I'm very suspicious of any phenomenon whatsoever that becomes noticeable and is reported on. I suspect that the enemy has contrived it and has allowed it and is promoting it. And so whether it's the Tea Party or Occupy Wall Street, even though I hear what you're saying, Brad, in regard to it's a way to dissent, and it's healthy that the Union now is in question. Anyway, excuse me. That's the last time I'm going to do that in this debate. It's y'all's game. Okay, Alex.
Jim, just relax. Say whatever you want to say. Right, it's your show. I'm happy to do this repeatedly if Brad's willing. I'm not going to attack anybody. Might do some voices or whatever, but
okay.
Relax and discuss it. Now, my view is, and it's an online petition. Okay, you got some tens of thousands. You say you're under the rug. That's great. That's groovy. But I just don't believe it means all that much. I wish it did. The same answer as before. I wish it really did mean something. I wish these people would, they're watching porn in one window and then they click, Texas out of the, that sounds darn good to me. I'm going to sign up there. what does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. You sign an online petition. Okay, great.
Well, couldn't it get something rolling? It might encourage.
I'll believe it when I see it. I'd love to see it. Just don't see it.
What's the evolution, Brad? Where do we go from, secession petitions, what's the next step?
What's the next step from the, this has done is it's done generated all these articles about secession, and in the media there's been, a friend of mine, he's been interviewed by Russia Today and the BBC and Time Magazine. He's with the League of the South. He's been going out and doing interviews, and what's interesting is that he told me that the Russia Today people are sending a little unit down to South Carolina, I think, to interview him. He's going to be on television. That's a great thing. What is the next step from this? I think this will. I'm almost certain this is going to fizzle out eventually, but it's going to be sitting there gnawing away on people's minds. And we're going to. And you got to think we got four more years of Obama ahead of us. I mean, what's going to happen with all this tax business? What's going to happen with how many times does he have to raise the debt ceiling just while he's in office? What happens if California goes bankrupt? I mean, this idea of secession is out there now. It's on people's minds.
Brad, let me interrupt. Look, all you can do is what Sam Adams did before the American Revolution. Keep firing. You just keep saying, it's not a Southern thing. It's a white thing. You say, look, white man who doesn't work from the state, what interest do you have in continued association with this horrible central government? All it does is start wars. All it does is print counterfeit money. All it does is stick your people in untenable situations racially and hector you for it. What interest do you have in further political association with these fucking Jews, Yankee liberals? Let's break up and all go our own way. And you just keep heating and heating and heating and heating. I always think of Hetzing in German, for Hetzen. Hetzing, heat them up. That's where you go from it. People sign something online doesn't mean that much. Got to be an agitator. agitate them. Explain to them. You're getting abused. You're getting suckered. You're being mistreated. You are being abused. These are the people doing it to you. Get back at them. Get away from them. Make them go their own way. Make them fight their own wars. That's how you do it.
Well, I agree with you there. We do need to agitate this issue. We need to let people know that the union is absolutely disastrous. Now, you mentioned the Michigan thing, the federal court striking down
You've talked about it. Tell the people about Arizona. What went on in Arizona? I know you know all the details better than I do. What happened there?
They went out and they passed an immigration law, and they had the whole establishment jump on them. And once they did that, it was a good thing they went and passed that law, because once Obama started ganging up on them, it led to a wave of sympathy in the other states, especially here in the Deep South. You had Alabama pass an even tougher law than they did, and Georgia and South Carolina passed these laws, and they got all sued by the Justice Department. And Holder sued Florida over their drug test for welfare benefits thing. He sued at least half the states in the South over something or another within the last 2 years.
Yeah.
That's great. Let the southern states be constantly fighting with the federal government. And every time there's a major decision, like take the Obamacare thing, for example. That was when the Obamacare decision came down, that created a wave of outrage. And as for secession, you know, these events moving forward, we can use that to ammunition. This is why you need to secede. We can constantly remind people of it. Like you were saying.
None of us agree on all the issues, and I will disagree with each of you in time on these different points we're bringing up. But Brad, let me ask you this, because I've spent a good bit of time in the Southern activism area myself when the Confederate flag was under attack and defending our heritage and history here in the South. And so I'm very familiar with the South's the history of the South during the Civil War, after the Civil War, etc. And I'm just curious, why do you think secession would work today when it was an utter and complete failure, when we were much stronger back then than we are today? And look at the consequence for us in having done so. I think you would agree the South to this day has not recovered from the war. And so to try to go back down that path again seems crazy.
Well, what I would say in response to that is that we don't have a choice. We can either get out of the Union or we can submit. That's the choice. If you like where we're going, and we can submit to that, and we can see like what the blacks and the Jews and stuff got in store for us going forward, we don't have a choice. Now, we lost last time, but we had a fighting chance. We put it all on the line. We had a fighting chance, and it wasn't a foreordained thing that we would lost. It could have went the other way, but I would rather have a fighting chance of if we're on the Titanic and the Titanic is sinking and we're all going down with it. I would rather take my chances swimming than go down with the ship. That's just the way I look at it.
Well, yeah, but here's the question. If they're not going to let you go, and there's no reason to think they are, then what do you do? Of course, if it was up to you, you'd be wise to secede. There's no doubt about that. But if they're not going to let you go, and there's no reason to think they will let you go, these people have moved on from consolidating the U.S. illegally, immorally, and in breach of the contract agreed on originally when we founded the country, to trying to consolidate, as you know, the entire world. We have troops in 128 countries or something. They won't leave people in the mountains of Afghanistan alone. They won't leave people in the little, you know, glades in Eastern Europe alone. They're going to bomb them. So why are they going to let Virginia and Alabama go? They're not. What are you going to do? What do you do if they're not going to treat you fairly and legally? What are you going to do if they're not going to give in to your will?
We don't expect them to treat us fairly and legally. They haven't been doing it in a long, long time. I mean,
and you have, but don't focus on that. We agree that they're bad and wrong. But what are you going to do about it? What can you do about it?
We can secede from this government, or we can submit to it. It's either or. You can try to leave. No, well, I take that back. There's three options. There's secession is the first option. The second option is submitting to the status quo and just living out our lives. And the third option is immigration. I mean, moving to some other country.
Okay, and but take secession. They say, no, we're not going to let you secede. We're not going to let you leave the union. Just like last time you tried it, we're not going to allow it. Then what do you do?
Well, one thing I would not say it's a foregone conclusion that they are not going to let us leave. I would point out that they've had all these media articles. You've had the Los Angeles Times came out just the other day and said, you're on to something. Is this both echoing?
Yeah, it is echoing.
Yeah, it is. I don't know how to eliminate that. One thing that can reduce it, though, is to speak slower and don't speak over the other party. Just kind of let the stream catch up with itself. I think that's part of it without being able to explain it in a super technical way.
Okay. I would say it's not a foregone conclusion that I think I'm echoing.
One thing I can do just to break it up, and you can collect your thoughts, I can disconnect from both of you and reestablish another connection. A lot of times that works. You know that from, you know, as much as you use a cell phone, no doubt, sometimes the line just becomes bloggy, and it's good to reestablish another. Before I disconnect from y'all, and I'll call you right back, think about this, and those listening can think about this as well. I saw a comment from a very astute comment in VNN's forum in regard to what the Soviet Union did in Poland, Czechoslovakia, other places, and they came in with tanks, and there was a physical confrontation, and then they compared that poster compared it to what happened at Ole Miss, and there's something going on with people in this country in regard to their what it takes to get them to really get to that point that I think Alex clearly wants them to get to, and I would be less than honest if I said I wish people had more of a backbone. But yeah, y'all be thinking about it, and I'm gonna disconnect and then we'll go back to it. What is the average American like now, and what is it going to take to get the average American to become part of a group that could alter our current government? Having said that, let me disconnect, and I will call y'all right back. All right. Let me just give it a moment, and let's see, video call group. Let's see, I'll try it both at the same time, simultaneously. Brad,
hello?
You there? Alex?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Does that sound any better?
This sounds, let me see if I'm echoing. I don't think so.
Okay.
Great. I can hear you fine.
Okay.
I don't hear any echo yet.
All right. No, I think it's better. All right. Alex, what's the deal with the average American? Where are they at, and why the apathy in general?
As long as people have food in their bellies, they're not going to revolt. It's when times are truly desperate. That's when they come out, and that's when the flies and bits of gum and wax come out of their ears and they start listening to extreme. I saw solutions. I saw a perfect quote today. The New York Times, okay, we know in Greece, right, 25% unemployment, 50% youth unemployment. The economy has been going backwards for like 6 years now. They're really scraping the people to pay these debts to these international bankers or usurers or whatever you want to call them. And Golden Dawn's going out there serving the people, giving them bags of food, helping them. And the New York Times just ran their latest hit piece on Golden Dawn, and they quote a woman. She says, yeah, Golden Dawn's pretty extreme, but this is an extreme time, and extreme times demand extreme solutions. And do I have this in front of me? Where is it? She says, okay, here it is. Just listen to this. This is the state to which the American middle-class person will have to fall until they begin seriously considering radical political alternatives. Now, this New York Times writing about Golden Dawn, Maria Chandraki, 29, an unemployed beautician, hadn't heard of Golden Dawn until the last election. Their positions may be extreme, she said, holding plastic bags of food she just received, but the situation is extreme as well. So we need extreme measures, she went on. We can't have so many nations and so many different sets of values and ideals under the same roof. And she's referring to the 2 million out of 11 million that are illegal aliens in Greece. Greece has a population of 11 million, and there's 1 to 2 million who are illegals coming into Greece either to stay there or go on to the rest of Europe. So see, this is the terrible situation with unemployment and these huge debts to the bankers they have to pay. That and they can't get jobs, so they can't get food. So they're turning to a political party that can supply them protection from the immigrants when they go to take their money out of the bank, that can supply them food because they're starving. And it has to be that bad before people will truly commit to an extreme party. But still, that's no reason the extreme party can't exist years beforehand and begin teaching people and agitating, explaining them, this is why our country's falling apart. This is why our country's falling apart. These are the people doing it. This is the solution. And maybe you got to be a prophet in the desert for a lot of years, but at some point when it does fall apart, and we know Zog's heading that way because of its internal contradictions, you know, tax and spend, print fake money and spend. That's all these stupid niggers know how to do and fund these wars abroad. When it all falls apart, then you have an opening. Until then, nope. As long as they got food in their belly, all they're going to do down south is watch SEC football.
Brad?
That's number one. Watch Fox News.
Brad, your sense of people in general in the country?
Well, listening to Alex, you know, I didn't hear anything I disagree with there. I think as the economic situation worsens, you'll definitely see more extreme rise in extremist movements, and you also see secessionist movements. This is one thing that that Alex hasn't commented much on. I mean, you have Golden Dawn going on over in Greece, and as Alex explains, the main reason Golden Dawn, everybody is talking about Golden Dawn, whereas 2 years ago no one had heard of them, is because of the this whole mess with the financial system, all these bankers, the euro, trying to save the euro, pushing all these what's called austerity measures on Greece because all this debt they built up. They have an enormous debt load, and so they're in talks to all these bankers. Now, it's important to keep in mind that what's going on in Greece is in an isolated example. If you go to Spain, which is another country that's is going through the same process with unbelievable youth unemployment, with these bankers and stuff screwing them over, and you'll see that in Spain, the richest province, Catalonia, is moving to secede from Spain right now. If you go to Britain, I believe in Britain, they're holding a referendum on Scotland's independence next year, if I'm not mistaken. There's going to be a referendum in Britain on whether Scotland can secede. Now, if you believe that the Jews control the UK, like some people do believe that the Jews control the United Kingdom, well, if that's the case, then the Jews or allowing Scotland to secede next year peacefully. Now, if you go to Canada, I want to say the Quebec Party, PQ or something like that, recently had an election, and they did really good in that election. They've came back. So what you're seeing is, like Alex said, it's the whole economy goes down the cliff, and people are turning to more extreme parties. And I would say that if you read the Buchanan book, I know Linder isn't a big fan of Buchanan, but he wrote that book, Death of the West, about how the age ratios were so out of whack and how in this decade there would be economic chaos that's come true. So if you, judging by what Buchanan said in the book and what's going on right now, it looks good moving forward.
Well, it sounds to me like both of you are saying that worse is better.
Well, I don't know. Worse may just be worse, but either way, I don't have any control over it. What we do is observe. You find the best analysis you can out there, and for me, it comes from the libertarians, although they leave the race out of it usually. but not always. They explain this is what the government is doing fiscally and financially with the money, and this is how this stuff has worked out in the past. And they do the best job of explaining this is what's coming. So I turn to them for that kind of technical analysis. But yeah, it's pretty obvious. You know, it's done nothing but counterfeit money, and what was it? Keynes called it, you know, deficit spending. That's their whole thing. And you get some nigger, and they don't have the slightest clue of what they're doing. So it's the reason I thought that Obama being reelected might be a little better for whites is because I think he is far more ignorant of economics than Romney is. Romney being a Wall Street guy,
the thing
and
that
actually having run a business, and I think it would tend to break down a little quicker under Obama. But I could be wrong.
But the thing about
Romney could have attacked Iran, and that might have who knows what would have happened. He had launched another neocon war in Iran. The Iraq War. I added a lot to the national debt. So.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't know, but you just know the general trends will keep going the way they are until there's someone or something causes them to reverse, and what that would be is not evident. It's evident they're just going to – the point the libertarians make is the value of paper money always goes to zero over time because they will not stop counterfeiting money. And that's – I mean, Barack added what? Something like literally trillions to the debt.
I think it was $6 trillion.
Yeah, so how long can that go on? I don't know. Maybe it can go on for 20 years. So that's why, you know, people can say what they want. It's bad. It's getting worse. But where the natural endpoint and what will happen at that point, I don't know. I don't see how anyone could know.
Somebody's got to know.
No, you can't know. It can't be known a priori.
Suspect and guess right, I guess, would be the better
No,
way.
What you can know is this is what white people, or even if you wanted to say Southern people, will need to do to protect themselves individually. And these are the political principles they'll need to embrace to protect themselves as a group under these declining circumstances. That's what can be known beforehand, and that's what we emphasize. And I point to Greece. Greece is copying what the Nazis in Germany did. They aren't afraid to criticize Jews or go directly after the media, and they've said... Brad said, well, they're working within the system. Yeah, they're working within the system, but that's more of like blessing bestowed upon them for all the hard work they've done out in the field. And Mikhail Oliakos, a very hard name to say, who's the leader of their party, responded to threats to ban it. You know, they keep raising this, maybe we should ban these guys before they take over. And he says, okay, ban us. We'll still be out in the streets and we'll take it from there. Until you have that, when you can plausibly say that, then the electoral process suddenly works for you. All the democratic machinery suddenly works for you. That doesn't work for you, and you can't do that, as Ron Paul learned. Romney can screw you in the back room, and the Fox News will cover up for it.
The thing that jumps out at me, though, in comparing Greece to the United States is we have so much more wealth than Greece. How many hundreds of years would it be before we reach the point they're at in Greece now on the street?
Well, I mean, we have more wealth than Greece. I don't know. It's a nice, sunny Mediterranean place. How much money do they need? They don't have huge heating bills. I mean, it's a travel economy.
I would say that's definitely a great point. A lot of these people who have been overeager about the collapse of coming. It's one of those things where, you know, it probably will collapse one day. But who is to say, you know, how much of a cushion, I mean, how much has been built up that they got to tear down before the whole bottom falls out of it? And you would have to think that with the United States being the most dynamic economy in the world, it's going to take them a long time to drive it down. Although, it could... There might be some kind of sudden crisis that takes it down. Suppose there was a revolution in a Muslim revolution in Saudi Arabia that knocked out all the oil there. Well, you know, that could bring it down really quick. You don't know.
Yeah, it's not foreseeable, but you just see the general trends and the way they're going are basically all bad for white people. And until they try to rally on the racial basis, they're not really going to get anywhere. I mean, you can say this, the South will, but I'll believe it when I see it.
Let me ask you two smart boys this question in regard to historic revolutions. Tell me about the Russian Revolution, the French Revolution, the American Revolution, and any other revolution you can, you know, cite. Do they have anything fundamental and similar with one another? I mean, that you can point out and say, okay, this is what triggered it, and this is the only thing that you, until these elements exist, you know, we'll just continue to kick the can down the road.
I'll let Brad answer that. I took a class in revolutionary movements. It was pretty darn boring, actually. But usually the conventional view is that revolutions happen when a very powerful state has just started to let up on the people. That's the point where it happens. But, you know, there are some similarities in the way like I think the Russian Revolution. It's more interesting, actually, to look at the NSDAP and what happened in Germany, because that's an example of whites fighting back against a more of a Jewish-controlled milieu or government, whereas the other ones were Jewish gangsters funded with Jewish billionaires' money in the Russian Revolution. But let Brad answer it.
I think we can agree that the Russian Revolution was made possible by the Great War, which severely destabilized all the monarchies. You had the Habsburgs, the Romanovs, the Hohenzollerns, or I don't know.
Hohenzollerns.
The war destabilized. It destabilized not just Russia. There was another one of those revolutions in Hungary, I want to say, too. And there was one in Bavaria that I think didn't Hitler play a role in putting it down in Bavaria?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but these were little Jews. They had been trying for probably the better part of 100 years in Russia to foment. They always say, oh, there are pogroms against us. The Jews were trying to foment revolution in Russia for a long, long time. And they were backed by Jews who came to America, their immigrants, their money was backing them, and their gangsters took over Russia, and they were going to try to do the same thing everywhere else. They were trying to do it in Germany. They succeeded in a couple of cities. Hitler and the newly, you know, the Freikorps, the newly freed veterans who were coming off the war, stopped them. But that's kind of what gave the original impetus to the Nazi Party, was stopping the Bolshevization of Germany. And that what they found in their tactics, and this is how you counter Jews, is what we should have been learning here for the last 50 years, but we've been too dumb and focused on the Fox level politics of the stuff. But that's what Greece is showing. The same stuff still works. You can still go directly after them, but you have to be physically brave. You have to be in the street. You can't fake any of this stuff. They have too much power.
If we get back to the Russian Revolution, it's clear it was. What provided the opening for that revolution was the war, the big defeat at the hands of Germany. And the American Revolution was very different in that when the Americans revolted against Britain, it was because the economy was doing really good in the United States, and the British were trying to restrict their ability to settle the continent, to go beyond the Proclamation of 1763, which go across the Appalachian Mountains. So Britain was just pretty much an albatross when the Americans revolted. Now, France is interesting because in all the huge wars that France fought against Britain and lost, especially in the American Revolution, they accumulated that huge debt. And that's why, you know, they called the Estates General, and that's what kind of opened the door to the French Revolution. So, if we're looking at can debt cause a revolution? You would look at the French Revolution. Although that's not necessarily one that kind of went our way. And here's another thing we need to point out. In the French Revolution, they made all the blacks into citizens, and it was like that for about 10 years until Napoleon overthrew it.
I find it curious to know where we're at in history. And wonder if there's any model out there that would say, okay, this is probably what's going to happen here, because these are the conditions that existed, say, in Rome. Some people, you know, sometimes compare the U.S. Empire to the Roman Empire. And so it's just curious to know where we're at and how long the current regime will last. But let's do this. Let's plow on to the next topic, and that is conservatism. This agenda was proposed by Brad, so you kick conservatism in there. There's no doubt that Alex has a strong viewpoint on it, but are you a conservative, Brad?
Well, it depends on what you mean by how do you define conservatism.
Exactly. Yeah, I hear you.
There's such a thing as a neocon, and I'm definitely not one of the neocons. Now, there's a paleocon people who are at American conservative website. I'm not one of those people. In my mind, the difference between a conservative and a liberal. A conservative is someone who is content, who identifies with their people, who identifies with their culture, who likes their society or is content with it, and they want to preserve aspects of it. Whereas a liberal is someone who is, and I got a liberal girlfriend, I can tell you this. A liberal is someone who is alienated from their culture and is alienated from the government and everything. And that's the major difference between conservatives and liberals, is the level of alienation from their surroundings. Now, I like Alabama. I like the South. I consider myself a Southern conservative, which is very different from the type of conservatives that you'll see on National Review. I know that William Buckley, F. Buckley went to Yale. I never went there, and I don't know that kind of milieu. That's not the background from where I'm coming. I'm a conservative in the sense that I identify with my state. I identify with our traditions. I like the South. I like my people. And that's why I call myself a conservative.
Are you a racist and a white supremacist?
I consider myself a racialist. I definitely believe in racial differences. Now, am I a white supremacist? I would say yes. I would say yes. I do think that whites, I do believe that Alabama is our state. I do think that whites should control our government. And I think that's the best way. I believe if this is our country, then we got to rule it. We got to control it. If it's our country, if this is nothing more than a colony, a doormat for all the people around the world to come in, that's not what I believe at all. So yes, if the definition of white supremacy is whites in charge of Alabama, then yes.
All right, Alex, your view of conservatism. Are you a conservative, Alex? You said you once were.
I am. I mean, I'm a conservative in the personal sense, and I'm an intellectual conservative. I read the best conservative thinkers, and they mean a lot to me. And I don't only read them, I reread them. I think about what they said, because very few things repay rereading as much as Burke's ideas, not just in revolutions in France, or thoughts on the revolution in France, but everything the guy wrote, there's value in almost every sentence. So I have a great deal of respect for that. Also, it dovetails with racialism perfectly. There's nothing really that's out of step. There's a couple things that could be a little out of step, but if you drew them out. But you could say that of Jefferson and all kinds of other conservative thinkers. But no, fundamentally, I learned a lot from that. That's my background. Personally, I'm a don't do it in the street and frighten the horses type. I believe, I don't particularly care about people's individual morality, but, when you're in public, you should act a certain way and not bother other people with your obnoxiously extruding your pseudo-personality, crap in your ears, and I don't like that stuff. I'm personally conservative. I come from a bourgeois German-American Protestant background, like, tens of millions of people, and also British background, like most of the people in the South. I'm a mix of those. Personally, I'm conservative, yes. Politically, I believe in attacking the conservatives because they can't defend the things that they claim to value. The church has proven unable to cope with this threat posed by the Jews. if the church were a good vehicle for opposing the Jews, who I perceive to control society, control the money and the media, the Nazis would have discovered that, and they would have used the church. But all these Germans, or many of them were Austrians with a Catholic background, realized this vehicle doesn't work for fighting this thing. You need something else. And boy, the minute they proved effective, the church is all over them, denouncing them. And the mit brennendes Sorge, with burning concern, the German term mit brennendes Sorge, with burning concern. They denounce racialism. They denounce basically white society's attempt to protect itself. Well, I'm more aggressive. I'm also personally aggressive, and a lot of conservatives are not like that. They're willing to be defensive. I'm not a racist. I don't do back-footed stuff. I attack. I go after. I've seen these dirty, filthy little Jews. I saw them in college. I saw how they act. Well, I don't take shit from them. I attack them. I put them on the defensive.
I'm not a bad guy. I'm a good guy. I don't mean to, you know. How do you play this game for decades and not realize what's going on? These people, I'm not willing to be on the back foot and be defensive and be a loser. You have to be aggressive. This is what you have to be: mocking, aggressive, derisive, and vicious and violent. If you want to control politics in this world, there are no rules in politics, and we keep Brad quoted somewhere, I was just reading in one of the threads on Occidental Dissent before I came on, someone quoted like someone just starting to wake up at Free Republic. Hey, maybe to this great confidence game, as one of the posters said, that's what it is. Gee, maybe this racist thing is just a big friggin' scam. It's only whites who are ever racist, and they're kind of every other group is voting for itself and its own interest, but not us. And these people are just like I was when I was in my early 20s, all we need to do is, change the welfare state policies and blacks will come around and be perfectly acceptable citizens. That's what I actually believed. I really, truly believed that, because that's what all these conservative writers were saying. But that's not the reality of it. And we need to smack these people over the head and perhaps even more importantly, just demonstrate the way Golden Dawn has, the way the Nazis did. No, we're not going that way. We're not going down with that this Jewish sinking of the American ship. We are going a different way. We're going to make race the basis of our society, not the Christian cult. That's where I disagree with the conservatives. I see the Christianity as a profoundly destructive cult, the worst thing that ever happened to white people. And then, no, I am not a Southerner. I don't allow people to call me a Southerner. That's a joke, although probably not to YouTube, but no, I'm not even a Southern admirer. I don't admire it at all. I think it's basically kind of pathetic and a Bible-based backward culture. Well, but that doesn't mean the North is a forward culture. There's generally a little more respect for the things that I respect, like reading and cleverness and wittiness. It is found in the North. It's not found in the South.
Are you a Californian? Is that what you are?
No, I lived there a couple times. We moved around. I was born in Wisconsin, but basically my dad's line was from Missouri. My mother's line was from California. So I have pretty good, and I went to school in California. So I know a lot about, I consider myself basically a Westerner. That's the part of the country I like best. I don't hold any particular brief for the Midwest. I don't particularly like it. I don't hate it. Alex, you describe liberals as alienated. That's generally correct. I'm alienated maybe a little, but not in that way. I have no fundamental argument with life the way it's lived by normal Americans. It's too big. I go to Hy-Vee today before I came on the show, and the woman, have a blessed day. The woman cashing me out. Okay, yeah, she's a nice old woman, but she's also an idiot. Okay, and I'm not going to not say that she is an idiot. And that's how it is. There's no tolerance for people like this. They don't like that. They don't like that in the South. They don't like it in the Midwest. The South and the Midwest are not that different.
Alex, let me ask you this. I've read some of your posts in regard to Tucker.
I have sympathy for smart people. I have sympathy for funny people. I have sympathy for quick people. The problem is these all seem like Jewish qualities, because it seems like Jews are the only ones who use irony. Jews are the ones who aren't always straight. White people, I come from my parents. You know what they like to do? They hated hippies. They came from UW up in Madison. McDonald was up there too. My mom's her girlfriend. My mom was a teacher. She was working on her PhD when she met my dad, who was out of the army. Right? They hated hippies. All right. My mom's friend's husband was in the Army Math Building when the Weather Underground blew it up. So that further added to their hatred. My parents liked to sit there on the couch and watch the Lawrence Welk Show. Now, and I used to like to sit there and watch them watching the show just because it's so funny. I mean,
this is the straightest thing in the world. This is how average white people are. And yeah, I'll admit, I'm not like that. But it's all right. It's all right to be an intelligent person. And there's a different culture. There's something better than what this Christianity has. There's something better than the type Christianity has produced. Believe me, when they come by my door, I sell them on. I can be more persuasive than these Christian people. They're always trying to sell me their Jehovah's Witnesses and the rest of it. No, not buying it.
Alex,
I know what they're like.
Alex, your harshness toward the South in particular, how much of it is it a hockey coach tough love spiel?
Understand this. The South was completely right in the Civil War. The North just cheated on a contract and just proved what a bunch of scummy shitbags. They dishonest. And even after the fact, they can't admit, yeah, we just fuck you up and messed up your stuff and didn't let you do. But, you know, that's what we are. That would have at least been, no, they have to they have to hypocritically go back and rewrite history, and they're constantly trying to shore it up. This is why people shouldn't talk down the libertarians. They're the one people who are continually saying, no, this is the reality of Lincoln. This is what he was actually doing. Now, they won't defend his racialism, but they will keep the real history alive. And this is what Brad ought to be doing, is saying, no, this is what you guys actually did. This is what you are. Keep holding it up to these people. They're not just the Jews. The Jews are the main defenders, right? Through Harry Jaffa out in Claremont, right? He's the main keeper of the Lincoln Flame, if he's still alive. And he didn't like it when I called him a nasty little troll. That's part of that's the conservative school that's the sister to where I went to school, Pomona, which is a real liberal sort of school, liberal WASP elite type school. Next to it is Claremont McKenna. Claremont McKenna is it used to be Claremont Men's College. It's one of the key producers of these neocons in the country, and they all go on to found businesses or go off to Fox News or whatever. But this is where a lot of the Lincoln flame is kept, and that's what people who are pro-South need to be continually attacking this, and they have a great ally in the libertarians. Here's the reality. Here's what you did. Here's what you are. You're fucking nasty, stupid hypocrites. You messed things up. Keep hitting them with that. So I totally sympathize with the South in that regard, but it's just as for Southern culture, no, it's completely foreign to me. I don't admire, you know, Baptists.
Alex.
Mike Huckabee. That is a flower of your civilization. Mike Huckabee. I mean, what the? Alex, you expect me to respect that?
Alex is your
Give me someone out of the South I can respect.
Alex.
Calhoun, okay. Andrew Jackson, okay. John Randolph, okay. I admire those men. But give me someone today. Newt Gingrich? Maybe he's from Pennsylvania. I don't know. But, you know, John McCain?
They're invisible.
Give me someone I can admire. I don't see any.
Alec, that's the point. They're invisible. You'll never see them from where you're at. You have to get out and go through the trailer parks and get out on the street. But, Alex, is your harsh focus aimed at the South, is it a hockey coach tough love harshness?
Yeah, maybe I'm just an asshole, Jim.
No, but still, I think you know what I'm talking about. Now, because
I try to say what's right, and I don't have another mode. You saw the article I posted about Mike Keenan, who was the coach of the Blues. I'm not into hockey, but the guy was a complete asshole, and he was constantly just funny story about him just riding someone because he's trying to get the best out of him. Man, I wish the South had won. That's the thing I hate about the South worst of all, is it was not able to vindicate its own right.
Okay.
And I say, well, why didn't you win? Jesus Christ, I didn't talk about the South 10 years ago until I got to know Southern people from running a forum and constantly talking about it. Where I went to school, which is a pretty darn elite school, there were, God, maybe a handful of Southerners there. They just aren't in those places. Like, you're going to beat these people by being stupid and not reading any books and being real. No, you're not.
So
they don't know the Northerners. They don't know the Jews yet. Somehow they're going to vindicate their own rights now when they're 100,000 times weaker. It's not going to happen, man.
Alex,
it's going to be some other way. It's going to have to be people like me who are aggressive, disaffected Northerners and Westerners who can actually do something about it. And of course, we won't reject any Southern support.
Alex,
we'll let Brad tell you how online petitions are going to change things.
No, I'm going to transition good to Brad here in just 1 second. But correct me if I'm wrong. You really love us no matter how much you yell at us. Isn't that right?
No, that's not right.
Come on, Alex. I think it is. All right, let me.
I don't hate you. I'm not opposed to
no.
you. I don't. I'm descended from the WASP Puritan assholes in part, not just Germans, but I really. Boy, if I could go into it, I won't do it because people are still alive. I'm descended from those Puritan assholes. I'm descended from people who are similar to the abolitionists, but also the people who fought it, fought the abolitionists, even got them lynched.
All right, now
and that's the side I side with.
Let's let Brad talk now because he
went on too long.
No, Brad has
I'm
been.
I'm trying to get something interesting for people to be for it to be worth their time tuning to listen. It's sometimes it's too early in the day to wake up. You know, fully.
Alex, the bar is so low that we don't have to do much here to be better than the alternative.
Oh, you're right about that. I don't watch Fox News. It's too boring.
No, we are tip top. There's nobody on the air now better than us three. Easily, that's the case.
But you know what, Jim? We can still get better. Let's focus on getting better.
No doubt. No doubt. No doubt we can get better. This is just a scrimmage. I mean, we're just warming up. But let's go to Brad because he has been incredibly eloquent in regard to defending the South. You're kicking us, but I'm going to turn it over to Brad now.
Okay. Just listen to Alex, and that was a pretty funny rant there. I got to give him two thumbs up for that. I will start off by saying when Alex says that we need to attack the conservatives. Now, I partially agree with Alex on this point. Well, I don't know if you know this, but 2 years ago, I moved to Virginia, and I lived there for a good few months, and I got to see the great capital of Washington, D.C., and I also got to spend a lot of time in Northern Virginia. In Northern Virginia, and I believe Linder has actually lived in that area.
Yes, before. I've lived all over D.C. area, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, and Pennsylvania, even.
Well, anyway, when I got to Northern Virginia, you know, that's like the capital of movement conservatism in the United States, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
All these damn conservative organizations are based in that area, right across the Potomac. Well, I got to meet a lot of these people when I was up there, and I'm not going to name any names here, but I got to visit one conservative organization in particular. I actually got to stay there for a few days, and they had they had us put up in this area. And they had a bookshelf full of books that was recommended reading, right? I went to the bookshelf, and there was nothing on the bookshelf by John C. Calhoun or Sam Francis or even Edmund Burke. Edmund Burke wasn't on the recommended reading list, but they had the Abe Foxman biography or this something about like the new anti-Semitism. And I got the book and I looked at it and I took a picture of it and I sat down and laughed. And when I was there, in Northern Virginia is not part of the South at all. It's full of all these counties that you got in Northern Virginia. It's populated by all these transplants from all across the country, all these people who work for the government. And so when I was there, I got to see the kind of people they're training to be like the future leaders of the conservative movement. And my overwhelming impression from going to the CPAC and checking out all these people up there is I had to interact with them and talk with them. And my impression was that these are a bunch of Yankees who don't have the first damn clue about how to conserve anything. I mean, I wouldn't count on these people to conserve the food in my refrigerator, but they wouldn't be able to even do that. And that's what just left a huge impression on me. That's our problem right there. The leaders of the movement are conservatives. The mainstream conservative movement. They're all these little hipster types that are recruited from all these damn places like Connecticut and New York and California. Don't know anything at all about conservatism. You couldn't hold a conversation with you for 5 minutes about anything. And this is just a job for them. It's a way to make an income.
Yeah, and of course, it's a business.
You got to think all this money all this money from across the country, all these checks are flowing in, and these are the people who are running the show. And you got to think, all the people who are voting for these people up here in Northern Virginia are people like me in Alabama and Mississippi and Tennessee, and you got these fools up here, in places like New York City, and out in Los Angeles, and in the D.C. area, and they're the ones who run the show, and we expect them to conserve something. It is absurd. That's the problem right there. It's the type of people that you got there. They don't have any real identification with any area. These are the kind of people. How can you conserve something if you're not even attached to a specific place? You got these
but
kind
Brad,
of people.
Brad, that's the problem. The problem is the people in the flyover, and I know exactly what you're talking about because I used to answer the mail that we got at the American Spectator, and they love Jew Ben Stein blowing smoke up the ass of the soldiers about what great America. These people are too unsophisticated, and frankly, the people who are running these shows, this industry, are just going to keep on molting them.
The thing is, Alex, is the type of people who work in movement conservatism aren't your average hillbilly living in a trailer park.
I know that.
In Alabama or Georgia. These
understand, I've been in that complex. I've worked in that. I was part of that.
As Jim used to say, they all used to have, and this is a good point that Jim made. They all got a certain look about them. You can look at them, and you can tell they're these kind of sissy looking people who are very they're bright, but they're dumb. They're not really conservative at all. They're just kind of like little egghead types who are graduating from their high school, who are moving living in all these suburbs around.
Yeah,
and they're getting jobs, and it all sucks them in. And when you say that you need to attack, well, of course, these are technocratic idiots couldn't conserve anything.
Well, they're not conservatives. They call themselves conservatives, but the average person can't make out the difference between the name and the essence, the real thing.
The point is that the people who live in these areas, like Arlington and Alexandria, Northern Virginia, and parts of Maryland, who were supposed to be the leaders of the conservative movement, have literally like nothing in common with the type of average conservative voter that I think of here in Alabama. There's like a vast cultural difference.
You got that right, man. Of course.
Okay. That's what the VDARE people have termed conservatism Inc. All these sissy-looking people who, these little technocrat nerds who graduate from high school and get a job in the professional conservative movement who spout conventional wisdom and don't have any deep thoughts and can tell you anything. That's the kind of people that's working there. And yes, we need to attack people like that. If you worked at the American Spectator, I'm sure you interacted with all those people.
Brad, I'm glad.
I mean, what you got to understand, it's degraded from my time. In my time, they were coming off. The reason that young, intelligent people like me were attracted to this was, A, there was no internet, and B, you had these wonderful, extremely erudite people writing these articles for National Review, and they dealt with literature and philosophy and history, all the stuff you deal with at OD, right? And they did it well, and they used words I'd never heard of, and they inspired me to want to learn more words than anyone else, which was kind of what Buckley did. And he created a whole generation of people that were thrilled by the way he did things. But then the Jews moved into conservatism. Around that time, they defeated the paleoconservatism, and they drove their leading members out to the fringes, and they took it over and made it totally policy wonkish and liberal. And that's who all these professional conservatives are now. You're right. They're these bright little nerdy type kids who have grown up in these liberal environments where they're like the one intellectual conservative, and then they flock to D.C. Nobody in D.C. is from D.C. It's one of those type of towns. And yeah, they work at all these little houses. Many of them were set up by Southerners like Richard Viguerie, the guy who invented direct mail to raise all this money. Or they work at Fox News. And these are – they're not conservatives. That's the problem. Not in any serious sense. Intellectual conservatism is gone. It just became about policy wonkery. They dumped all the racial stuff. National Review used to publish Revelo Oliver. He was a personal friend of William F. Blatt.
And Joseph, think and about Joseph that. Blatt, too, before he martyred himself on the Jewish question.
So you see, they stood for what we stand for in the 60s, and they stand for the opposite today. They're unprincipled. Well, what attracted me to William Pierce, Pierce said the same thing in 2008 as he was saying in 1968. This is the difference. These are not conservatives. They're just they're liberals. They stay on the one level. It's what they agree with the liberals on that matters, not where they disagree. They disagree on trivia. For something serious, you have to go outside to the internet. And there's in the real world, there really isn't anything that represents what you're saying, either true conservatism or true Christianity or or, you know, true racialism. Well, it's all manipulated. It's a manipulated circle out of New York and D.C., and it's basically run by Jews. The face is not usually Jewish, although it's more Jewish than it ever has been, but that's the reality of it.
A couple of questions.
Now, I did see a lot of the Jews up there who were in the conservatism stuff, and it's like you had like these Jews and these weird looking people on top of all these bright little high school types.
Look whose agenda gets pushed ultimately. It's never our agenda. It's never a normal white agenda.
I told you I saw the Fox News book and I took a picture of it and I just laughed. And my impression of those people was that they were a joke and I was going to go home to Alabama.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Alex, and Brad, you comment too. And by the way, Brad, I'm glad you brought up V-Dare because I want to ask you some more questions about them and their writers, Bramlow and his writers. But Alex, what do you think about this proposition that William Pierce helped and was a fomenter for the ADL? The ADL needed the National Alliance. What about that?
I don't agree. I mean, the ADL will just make up whatever it wants. I mean, they will demonize the wimpiest social Christian conservative and turn them into, no matter if you disagree with their agenda at all, they're going to call you a Nazi. William Pierce was principled and consistent over decades, and he made a very powerful impression on people. I think he did basically nothing but good. His organization wasn't that good, but as an intellectual, he was probably the most valuable person over that time period. So I give him great credit. He inspired me, certainly.
Brad, your view of Pierce?
I used to listen to him back in the day. I used to enjoy his podcast or his radio show when he had it. I had only been following him for about a year or two when he died. He was what I liked about Pierce is he was a very straightforward person.
Let me raise this issue too while it's in the forefront of my mind. I saw this in the thread about this debate at VNN, and that's the Klan, the terror thing, stymies and thwarts any real political genuine effort. That the bus, for example, that was blown up in Tel Aviv recently, who knows, the Israelis may have done it simply to kill the peace process. And what do y'all say to the fact that y'all are simply agent provocateurs and that you're hurting more than you're helping? Brad, you first.
That me and Alex are agent provocateurs?
Right.
I would say that I've never engaged in violence against anyone. I'm just a guy with a website. I just follow the news. I'm not out trying to. If I was out like an agent provocateur would be someone like Hal Turner, for example, who's out there saying you need to go out and engage in violence and do stuff like, you know, that's usually the clear sign of an agent provocateur. People are going out saying that you need to personally put yourself on the line and engage in violence. And I don't do that. I tell people that going out and doing stuff like that is usually just going to backfire. And it's not going to do us any good. And the Southern Poverty Law Center delights in that. Now, when that guy tried to blow up, I think he tried to blow up the Family Research Council over the Chick-fil-A thing, that worked against them. That embarrassed him.
Alex, your view on being called an agent provocateur?
My view is that –
excuse me, Brad correctly pointed to Hal Turner as an example of a provocateur, neglecting only to mention that he was formally paid by the FBI. You should go out and kill this or this judge or this congressman. That's what an agent provocateur does. I don't advise anyone to do anything. I will discuss violence intellectually as an analytical matter, and I will talk about what the government does to us. It's like, but politically, the correct view is what Hitler said, you know, as long as the state follows the law, we will too. Does the Zog follow the law? But I would not advise anyone to do something I wouldn't do myself, not because it's illegal, but because it's dishonorable. It's un-Aryan. And I must, if I'm to any extent a leader, even of an online forum, I must conduct myself honorably and better than average to be an example for other people. I would never tell other people to do something I wouldn't do myself, and I never have told anyone to do anything. It's just simply a very common lie of low quality, low character white nationalists who will ever claim that I have told, or I or Metzger or anybody has told people to do stuff. It's just a goddamn lie, and they're trying to get you in trouble anonymously for something you didn't do by repeating one of the common Jewish memes that you see in all the Jewish media. Whenever the Jews make a movie about white nationalists, what do they show? They show a middle-aged wizard behind the scenes manipulating these innocent or these teenage boys looking for a father figure into carrying out acts of terrorism for us. So low-character white nationalists or antis pretending to be white nationalists will claim that's what men like me or Brad or Metzger or anyone else are doing, but in fact, that's not the case. We're too honorable to act like that. It's not advisable in any case. We don't do it. I mean, point blank. The only people who do stuff like that always and inevitably turn out to be federal agents. Hal Turner is a perfect example. Hal Turner was banned from my forum. I warned people against him. I met him. I said, the guy acts, he's all, you know, I met him in Knoxville. He was all totally cheery, and he kind of laughed. Oh, you seem kind of nervous. Fuck yeah, I'm nervous. I'm going out to speak against murderers, and they've got helicopters out there. They've got, you know, dogs. They've got they're treating me like the bad guy for talking about, you know, these kids who are murdered. Wow, what a warped society we've become. So, you know, his reactions were not normal. That's how you tell. People who act like that and have that brusque, burly sort of a thing are very often, they are the ones we're being put up to this by the enemy. We know that from history. So
that's beneficial, I think, for younger people listening in now and later. Let's go to V-Dare. We've been talking about conservatives. You had commented, Alex, a while back, not very long ago, actually, that people like Brimelow, they're not even in the game. But I discern that anyway,
no, they're in a game. It's not the game I'm in.
You say they're not even in the game. What's your criticism of a Peter Brimelow and what he does there at V-Dare?
Oh, Brimelow are professional conservatives. I call them, when I poke at them as illegal aliens come over from Britain, or what they call in Britain, chancers. They're over here to make money. And they realize that they can jerk off the American middle class by providing them, you know, solid entertainment and quasi-intellectual material about the decline of their country without ever actually intending to do anything about it. Indeed, Brimelow has stated publicly that he doesn't believe that our situation is reversible. He doesn't believe whites basically have enough inherent toughness or nastiness in them to turn things around. We're too polite. And, you know, they employ various Jews. They employ the noseless Filipino chick with a bad attitude, who's married to a Jew, the Malkin, Trash Mountain Princess, as I call her. They employ a number of other. I honestly haven't read them for 10 years. I read them the first 2 or 3 years when I started VNN. They do have good stuff, and people will link to it, and I'll read it on the forum. But other than that, it doesn't interest me. It's just conservatism. They aren't going to do anything. They're going to whine about, oh, you know, if you want to go to them for the fine data points on our demographic decline, do it. But I mean, what, you know, doesn't lead anywhere.
Brad,
not interesting to me in the slightest. The change comes in men who will go in public under their real name and lead people to a different outcome than what we're going to get if we don't do anything. V-Dare is a 501c3, right? That's how all the magazines and all the political groups and all the churches are set up, saying they will follow the federal law. In exchange, they can receive tax write-offable donations. So that's what their thing is. It's raising money. So they can raise a few hundred thousand dollars a year from older white people who were worried about stuff. But the change lies in the young, angry white people, not in the old conservatives.
Brad, your view of VDare. You were recently on the front page of VDare.
Like I said, VDare links to my site pretty frequently now. I've never met Peter Brumlow. I've talked to him on the phone several times. He seems like a good guy to me. I read his site daily. I enjoy reading the articles there. It's just a site I enjoy reading. I know they do fundraising. And Greg Johnson, he does fundraising too. I enjoy reading those websites. And I'm trying to think of who I know at VDare in real life. I know Paul Kersey. He posts there pretty regularly. And I know James Kirkpatrick, who both write some really good articles. And I know them in real life. And they're completely solid people. They're completely solidly 100% committed to our side. I know them too in real life.
Well, defend what Alex is attacking them. He says that they're not really serious. It's all about money and making a living. They're too polite to get any real results, and it's a dead end. And it may be fun to read, but it may be good entertainment, but it's a dead end and not effective way of viewing the world.
Well, Alex, it said we need that kind of intellectual culture. He said that we need websites like that. He's praised Greg Johnson pretty highly for putting out Countercurrents. And I know he thinks very well of Lou Rockwell, the Lou Rockwell site. And they do pretty much the same thing, although they're pretty weak on immigration, whereas VDare is very tough on immigration.
Okay.
And I see immigration as our most important issue. So, I see when I look at Countercurrents and I look at Lou Rockwell and I look at VDare, it's just people like who are putting out ideas. And Alex, he's always said that's what we need to do.
Right.
And I'm supportive of that. I don't have a problem with him at all.
Let me ask you this.
They're not trying to lead people in the streets.
Yep.
But I don't think they say that. They're trying to do that at VDare.
Do you think it's possible to seduce them over to Alex's side?
Well, that depends on what Alex is advocating.
Let me tell you what Alex wants. Alex wants us out in the ripping street telling people, by God, we're about to take this government. We're going to be in charge. We're going to bring all our troops home. We're going to close the ripping border. We're going to stop forced integration. That's what, in general. I mean, in other words, go get out in the street. The bottom line, get out in the street. And at some point, I want to that's something I want to ask y'all about. We're doing a lot of pontificating right here and now. I want y'all to think about the news out there that y'all think is best, and then I want to come back and revisit this in various ways. Because again, keep in mind, I fully know who's out there, even though I'm not an intellectual. I know what's out there in regard to commentary, and nobody even approaches where we're at right now. Not even with a 100-foot pole, but. That's what, in general, I think. Can you envision a Brimlow or Kirkpatrick or any of those guys who are writing now to actually put on jeans and boots and show up with some more white boys out in the street?
Kirkpatrick, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely, no doubt about that.
That's interesting.
I'm not him in real life.
That's interesting. Brad, you mentioned Greg Johnson a couple of times. Let's tackle that. He's an enigma to me of sorts. And let me just be blunt. The thing about homosexuality, Brad, is Greg Johnson a homosexual?
He's never admitted it publicly. I'm positive. I think he's bisexual. That's my belief.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's bisexual.
That is really something that he would end up in such a prominent place, because a lot of people speak highly of him in terms of his intellect. How smart is he, Brad, in your opinion?
He's a very smart guy. There's actually like two or three more homosexuals over there at Countercurrents. There's Jack Donovan, there's James J. O'Meara, and And well, I think there's another one. I forgot who he was, but I know he's publishing some book called The Homo and the Negro or something. I saw.
Yeah, James O'Mara, right? Isn't that his name?
Yeah.
And these are homosexuals that you're talking about?
I know at least two of them are.
And are they in San Francisco?
I don't know where they're at. I think one of them is.
Is Greg Johnson? Is Greg Johnson?
Greg Johnson's in San Francisco for sure.
Man, I tell you now, you know, we're talking about, I recall when I worked in New York City, there was a lawyer, homosexual lawyer, I believe his name was Roy Kahn. And he was, I believe, a homosexual, but he was a closet homosexual. He wasn't flamboyant about it. And he was a very skilled lawyer, and the best in New York hired him to get done whatever they needed to get done legally. But for as anemic as our situation is, it just doesn't, from my vantage point, it seems totally unacceptable to even have that as an issue. That he is so undermined by that aspect. Even, and I saw where Alex commented in a thread, their voices, when McDonald and Johnson and some other guy were talking.
Parrott,
yeah. I listened to a little bit of it, but like somebody else commented, I couldn't go. I couldn't, you know, I even if I wanted to do it intellectually to just hear everything, I couldn't. I couldn't listen to it. So, before we go to Alex, I'm sure he's got a lot to say about Greg Johnson. What is your opinion about Greg Johnson's role, and is he a positive, a negative? Where does he fit in where we're at and talking about here?
Are you asking me or Brad?
Brad.
Oh, maybe you're asking me?
Yeah.
Well, I think Greg was one of the first people I met in the white nationalist movement. In real life, he was living in Atlanta not too long ago, about 2 or 3 years ago. And I met some of those people up there. And my impression of Greg is that he was very smart, but he's just not someone who shares my culture. Mm-hmm. He's not someone who's from around here, obviously.
Was
fine.
Let me ask you this. Do you feel like he ever tried to seduce you?
Oh, no, definitely. I only met him like three times, two or three times. I think it was like three times, and one time was a friend was getting married, a mutual friend, and then we went to the strip club for his bachelor's party. I don't remember Greg going. I think he went home. That was the first time I met Greg, and then I met him at a conference.
Wait a minute! You went to a strip club with Greg Johnson?
No, he said Greg Johnson didn't go. He said
a mutual friend of ours was getting married, and he went to the strip club for his bachelor's party, and Greg went home.
Oh, okay.
It's just curious to me that this bisexual or homosexual or San Franciscan would end up in the middle. I should take that back, because there's a lot of junk out there. I guess that's just another way of putting it. That's just par for the course. Alex, what's your take on Greg Johnson?
Well, it's interesting. He first came to my attention. I guess I've had a very long relationship with him, but I never really knew the guy. He just sent me stuff. It was very, very, very good, and I posted it on VNM, but I never talked to him. I've never met him. Like I said, I've never even talked to him on the phone. And I, at some point, you know, I suspected for a number of reasons that he was queer, but I didn't really care. It's not that big of a deal to me, as long as he doesn't make a deal of it, and he doesn't make a deal of it. I appreciated the brilliance of his articles and his movie reviews, but as I recall, this sounds bad to say because I can't prove it, but he told me that he was homosexual, and I don't have it because it's on an old computer where he admitted it, so I probably shouldn't say it. But yeah, he is. He's a homosexual. He lives in.
Is he a bisexual?
I don't know about that. I don't think so, though. Based on insight I have from people I know that do know him. I don't think he's a bisexual. It's possible, though.
Brad, why do you say he's a bisexual rather than a homosexual?
I've heard of him being attracted to women or interested in women before. I've known people who've said that. So the back when everybody was saying that Greg was a homo and I was denying it, I honestly thought he was bisexual.
You know, as popular as homosexuality is in the country now, it's kind of surprising that he doesn't just come out and say, yeah, I'm a proud homosexual. What about it?
Well, I accused him of being one, and he most in large measure, I was just kind of being an asshole, but I honestly wanted to kind of blood him and see how he'd respond. Now, he should have responded one way, but he showed his lack of political instincts by just becoming hysterical and fanatical and starting accusing me of being, you know, whatever. Just he always accused people of being a narcissist or an egotist, but like, gee, Greg, that's how you handle something like that? There's a lot better ways to handle it than that way. So I was kind of being an asshole, but it did make a point that, and this is one of the, there's kind of a flip thing to homosexuals. They're kind of natural conspirators. What they do has always been looked down on and scorned as behavior, so they've always had to hide it. Hiding it has made them good, natural sort of networkers and behind-the-scenes conspirators. You definitely need a measure of that to fight with the Jews. That type is going to be a lot more able to create the kind of network or combination, as they used to say in the old days, to defeat the current powers that be than these religious conservatives who are so easily duped, as Brad described, perhaps implicitly, but I confirmed from having seen it myself. The people in flyover have no idea that the professional conservatives are an entirely different kind of people. In fact, many of them are homosexuals. Yep. You know, the Shep Smiths and these other male cheerleaders, half the Republicans are goddamn queers. I mean, the head of Britain now has a huge pedophile ring. Belgium's government was brought down by being a big pedophile ring. These people are naturally conspiratorial and they're natural sort of politicians. Now, Greg Johnson doesn't make a thing of it. I don't have that big of a thing of it. I don't control it anyway. He does his good work at Countercurrents. He kind of moved on from BNN. He has his own thing. My disagreement with him is more political. And that's that he thinks he's going to affect a sea change in mindset by, you know, these 10,000 word reviews of Batman. You know, he's going to change the culture rather than getting involved in politics directly. And I say, look at Golden Dawn. That's how you do it. You don't need any new myth. These guys are all about, oh, we got to have some new myth to inspire people. Look, the moment makes the myth. The moment makes the man. When people don't have anything to eat and they're listening to us, that's when it will all happen. It could be anyone leading it. Whoever has the loudest voice and has a little bit of an idea of what we need to do, that's who people will listen to and follow. We don't. All this stuff on the internet, it's a bunch of faggotry. I mean, it's necessary. We need it. We should do more of it. The more of it there is, and there is more now than there ever has been before, it's a good thing. We need to expand and enlarge the circle, right? But let's not kid ourselves. It's a superficial thing. Ultimately, it's going to have to happen in the real world under real names.
I have a question for both of you in regard to the politician that would lead and actually mount an effective campaign. Brad, what kind of politician, and let me confess this, I attempted multiple times in running for Congress, U.S. Senate, governor, state house. But ultimately, I'm honest enough to just totally admit I lack the interpersonal skills to be a politician. I've got a thin skin, and you know I'm not conspiratorial. I tend to be blunt and direct. But those are my flaws, obvious for most people to see. But let me ask y'all, forgetting about my lack of political skill.
Wait. That's a lack of political skill in a democratic system. That's not necessarily a lack of political skill when you actually need to get shit done and there's a real emergency and people want to solve a problem rather than be pandered to and told lies. Golden Dawn is not pandering to people. That's what these I've been trying to get across. See, our mindset in white nationalism comes from Southern religious concern. Our mindset is this democratic pandering basis. What can I do to you? I call it the gay waiter strategy, trying to sell a table of bored housewives on the lunch special. That's not what's going on in Greece. They're desperate. They need food. They need a solution to the violence caused by these goddamn squatters that are backed by the international media. When you have desperation, you're not trying to sell people.
You're friggin' helping them. You're saying, we will lead. The state is hurting you. The media are lying about it. We will lead you to safety, and we will lead you to keep Greece Greek like you want. We are the normal good guys. We are with you. We are helping you at every stage and phase of the way. Come with us if you want to live. Just like Arnold said in, you know, Terminator, right?
Alex, let me ask you this,
Totally different.
Alex, you're smart enough to know, though, people are not hungry in this country.
We've got fat people. We've got fat obesity.
You think I can
go out in the street and start selling the, you know, 100. Brad could make a big deal. Oh, how's that working out? How are you selling, you know, exterminate the Jews? And yeah, they don't want to hear that now.
Well, why not just be quiet then?
Because our country is falling apart. It is falling apart for reasons. It is falling apart for the reasons I've identified. It is falling apart for the reasons I've identified, and I've put the solution and explained the problem in the most memorable possible terms. No one could do it any better than I have done it. That's what can be done virtually at this time, right? And just why do I want to debate with Brad? Because Brad could be a true representative who can write a true history. Sometimes a people can be created by acts of narration, of historical description. He has a professional level talent at writing history. If maybe I can help him, encourage him, you know, take someone who's at least a semi-enemy and turn, hey, come on, man, you're doing great stuff. Keep doing it. Create a new myth for the South. If we got to have a fucking myth.
Who is this?
Teach the Southern people who they fucking are. Even people like me who don't like the South will help you.
I don't consider Alex to be an enemy. More of an adversary, I would say sometimes. But you know, it's been 10 years now, and I imagine 10 years from now we'll still be following all this. So we're all watching the same show. So I check out what Alex has to say about various topics.
We will see. You know, the U.S. is declining for the reasons we all know and talk about. But ultimately. To get our people to respond, if there's no emergency, then you have to do like what I've done. You have to get in their marrow through these emotional appeals. The argument is merely the underwiring.
And as to Jim's question, when we're looking for a leader, what kind of person do you need? Now, and you got to think, well, there's differences between the type of white people you got in, say, San Francisco, where Greg lives, and Mississippi, where Jim lives, and Alabama, where I live, and Missouri, where you live. And you need, what I think the most important thing is that you need someone who can connect with the audience that we need to connect with, and who can translate what we're saying into their own language for them, so they'll understand it, and we have a communication problem. You have all these people, ordinary people, who have all these beliefs, and then you got this small group of people like us, and we're having trouble translating our message into terms that ordinary people can understand. And I think that's a real big barrier. We do need someone who can express these ideas in not in an intellectual way, but in a way that they can take the ideas from the intellectuals and deliver it in a form that resonates with ordinary people.
Look, here's something I enunciated many years ago, which remains true and is completely demonstrable. We're doing it. We're doing what can be done right now, all of us, in our various efforts. And what you see wherever you go, wherever someone writes an article, the comments under it are always to the right or the white side of what the editor writes. Jim Goad, you just published his article on Jews, right? Underneath it, what do you see? Everyone, look, Jim, dude, we've been past that. We knew that 10 years ago, what you're saying. It's a good article, but everybody knows, man. The Jews and this evil, you want to call them Yankee Jew evil elite, is just a thin scum on top of a mass of people who doesn't agree with it.
There's some points I wanted to make while we're still talking about Greg. I have some things written down here I wanted to say about Greg while we're still talking about him. I think that Greg is a talented publisher and a fundraiser, but you know, he has a personality that often leads him to clash with people, and he had a big clash with the people at TOQ. They just didn't mesh well. But that doesn't mean he's not. You know, he's good at publishing books. He's good at raising money. He's an excellent. If he's a niche book publisher, that's great. He's good at doing that. Now, and I got something else written down here. The most insightful essay that Greg ever wrote on his Countercurrents website was called "West Coast White Nationalism," and I think he should focus more in that vein. Maybe he would be better at talking to the people in the San Francisco Bay Area or out there on the West Coast from down south of all those suburbs of Los Angeles and San Francisco all the way up to Portland and Seattle. I think that the kind of people that Greg hangs out with, that's where he's coming from. And, you know, the homosexuality thing would be a completely deal-breaker here in Alabama or Mississippi or Georgia, but, you know, that's not considered so weird out in San Francisco. He might actually, it might actually give him some more credibility.
He does hold meetings. He holds meetings a couple times a year, and he's basically kind of doing what you're saying, I think.
And one thing that here's where I think the biggest failing of Greg is, and not in terms of him personally, but in terms of his project, is that he doesn't focus on the most fundamental questions that need to be answered. He spends a lot of time talking about all this esoteric stuff, but okay, you want to create, they keep saying they want to create a white ethnic state. Okay, what's the name of it? Where is it going to be located? What ethnicity is going to be the basis of this ethnic state? How do you create it? Basic questions like that. They don't even ask the most. You ask them, okay, you want to create a white ethnic state? Well, where is it? They can't even tell you where the nation they want to create is. They can't even give you its name. And that's the problem with him. And that's the problem with where Greg's coming from. All this stuff is floating up in the air. It's an abstraction. He's not bringing it down to earth. It's like an escapist fantasy where you mentioned the Christians. You know how St. Augustine wrote the book City of God. Well, that's kind of like where the white ethnostate is. It's way up in the clouds. He doesn't explain where this thing would be located, and if, until he can actually pin something down to reality, he's not going to get anywhere with it.
Hey, fellas, we've got about 8 minutes left. I want to stick with our timetable of limiting it to 2 hours. And so let's discuss in wrapping up here maybe where we're going to go from here. And I think the next time we get together, let's not even call it a debate. Maybe y'all can think of another term to label.
Crossfire.
Well, yeah, what that's an idea. That's got a ring to it. But in terms of the timing, Wednesday's not a great day for me, nor is Tuesday. Monday's a good day for me. What's y'all's Mondays like, this coming Monday? What I'd like to do, in other words, is after we end here, is go ahead and post the next time we're going to get together and make this thing a routine, because people are desperate to hear. You know, like I said, we're the best there is. And like Alex said, we can get better. But my listenership's maxed out. There are more people undoubtedly wanting to listen right now than...
Jim, haven't you ever heard self-praise is gauche?
Gauche.
You're hearing it now, buddy. let's let others figure out how brilliant we are, huh?
No, well,
give him a chance. Let's not tell him. Let's let him figure it out.
Alex, I'm not an intellectual. I'm a salesman, and I believe it too. I'm an honest. I know what's out there.
I'm just being honest and telling you how great I am. I would be concealing the truth from you if I didn't express it.
Well, I think it is, buddy. It is true, though. I mean, you tell me if the choice is out there, they're getting worse and worse.
I don't know. I honestly, I'm so been in this so many years. There's very limited white stuff that I listen to. I mostly look other places.
Well,
but you know, I like reading OD because it's quality stuff. I look for quality. I don't care about particularly the politics of the person. I want quality analysis.
Well, the difference though between me and say other personalities out there, I've got a huge ego, one that far exceeds my ability and skill, but still it's there. I mean, I've got one heck of an ego. So anyway, how's Monday with y'all?
Well,
I can do Monday.
You want to do this coming Monday?
Yeah.
That's fine.
All right, fine.
We just have a lot
sure.
of stuff here.
What time? 1 o'clock?
Yeah. I really don't like to make it earlier than that for my own reasons. But, yeah, I guess I could do 1 o'clock Monday.
How about you, Brad?
Yeah, I could do it.
if Brad's happy doing it, I want to thank you for producing it because it's very easy for me to sit and talk, and I know you're doing the hard work of setting it all up and producing it. So people ought to appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate, again, your bravery in showing up. It's kind of pathetic that there's so many real risk involved in doing this.
Well, Jim, I'm not a brave person, and people listening should understand that. I'm a person of very middle-of-the-curve bravery, and I don't consider myself brave by any means. And what that means is a heck of a lot of other people could be doing more and better than what I'm doing.
Well, this
maybe not as well as I'm doing it, but they could do the same thing, and it's not a complex thing, despite what all the intellectuals may say. It's not complex. It's very simple, actually.
I will interject here and say that one of the reasons, I just didn't even care about using my real name anymore, is because I think the taboos have, especially in these 4 years of Obama, have really weakened. And I think there's a lot more people out there. If you came across them and told them what we think, they'd probably nod their heads and agree.
Yeah. Well, so it's this coming Monday at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Yeah, that's fine. That's
okay.
Fine.
Very good.
Do it for 2 hours again, or how long?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, why not?
Do 2 hours about my limit. You know what they say, Jim? What's the old showbiz adage?
Well, I don't know what the showbiz adage is, but
it's always leave them wanting more.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, well, that's a good line. I was thinking quality is better than quantity. That's why I'm holding to 2 hours. Certainly not more than 2 hours, but this 2 hour, it went by quite fast.
We didn't get much to Ron Paul.
Oh yeah. Well, there's a ton of issues out there to discuss. Yeah. We've only scratched the surface, and there's a lot of other ways we can go at this as well. One thing I'm keenly interested in is not only for people to tune in to us to hear your opinion, but also to be informed about how to view events occurring in the world. For example, in Gaza right now, I would like to turn us all into journalistic voices where we're not only simply offering our opinion, we're giving people facts and helping them think. Because that's what's going on right now. They don't think for themselves. Other people think for them. So if that's the way it works, let's start thinking for them. If they won't think for themselves, let's think for them.
All right.
Thank you, gentlemen. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
See you on Monday.
See you later.
Bye.
This is Jim Giles, and you're listening to Radio Free Mississippi.